Well, you've been studying the axial skeleton for a week straight now. And you're all familiar with that. So it's time to finish up the skeleton by starting to study the appendicular skeleton, which will bring us to the end of this first unit of laboratory material. Yeah.
If I remember correctly, on the last week you had on the paper that you do not specifically have to memorize each and every bone and like bone and all that stuff. So is that accurate?
What I was saying is that they don't all have unique names. So when you memorize vertebra, you know, this one doesn't have a drastically different name from the other vertebrae. That's what I was saying. There's not 206 totally different names. There are ways to uniquely identify them, though, and I'm going to actually talk about that today. But yeah, you do have to know all 206 bones and the parts on them. All right, so we're in the appendicular skeleton now, and what's included in that?
The
limbs. Well, the bones of the limbs. That's not all, though. Shoulders and hips, which occur in girdles. So there are limb bones, and there are also two girdles that make up the appendicular skeleton. What are the two girdles? Pelvic girdle is one. And the pectoral girdle. Now they're both called girdles because they form a ring. That's what to girdle means. Not necessarily a complete ring in this case, but that's why they're called girdles. So the pectoral girdle is made up of four bones. What are those? Two scapulae, right? Scapula is singular, but there are two of them. So two scapulae and two what? Two clavicles, correct. And so you can see that the pectoral girdle forms a partial ring around the neck. The pelvic girdle, on the other hand, is made up of two adult bones, these ones I'm holding in my hand. What are these bones called? What's each one called? Os coxa. Coxal bone or os coxa, which is what os coxa means, coxal bone. No, coccyx is part of the axial skeleton, the very bottom part of that whole vertebral column. This is one os coxa, though, and there are two os coxae making up the pelvic girdle. It's another name for the os coxa. You can call this a pelvis as well. What's the plural of pelvis? Pelvis. Just like peenies, like I was saying, is the plural of penis. Pelvis is the plural of pelvis. So you have two pelvic bones, or two pelvis, two os coxae. But each one is formed originally when three individual bones at the time fused together. And so by the time it's one bone like it is now, what do we call the joints between those three components? Not symphyses, because symphyses have fibrocartilage in them. There's no more soft tissue. It's all bone now. Synostoses, correct. And so, yeah, the individual bones had names, and we retain those names, but now they refer to parts of the os coxa rather than as individual bones. And those are ilium, ischium, and pubis. Now look at the overall skeleton and see how this thing's oriented in space. The os coxa has a flat blade-like part, and that always tells you that's the top of the bone, the superior part of it. Okay? And you can see that actually has a bony landmark on your surface. Orientation is important if you need to figure out which one is right and which one is left, which is on your list as a requirement, right? You should be able to tell what's right and what's left. So this blade-like part is the ilium. On the bottom are the other two parts, and notice the difference. one edge is pointed and one edge is rounded. The pointed end is the pubis. Plural of pubis? Pubes. So the two pubes, one from each os coxa, come together to form the pubic symphysis. This is the pubic symphysis. It's a symphysis because this is fibrocartilage between the two pubes. All right? And so the pointed part, which is the pubis, always tells you that's the anterior part. So if you know the top and the front, you should be able to tell whether it's right or left, especially given that there's a socket in it, right? This socket, by the way, is called the acetabulum. Any idea about the root of that word? Vinegar, right. Acetic acid is from vinegar. Acetabulum means vinegar cup, which aren't very popular household items anymore, but they used to be. That's why it was named that. And so that's the ball, that's the socket that receives the ball, which is the head of the femur, to make the hip joint. And so obviously the socket is going to tell you that's the lateral part of the bone, right? The leg doesn't hang from the middle, it hangs to the side. So, with all that in mind, you know, this is front, this is top, this is side. Therefore, this would have to be a left os coxa. The other one is the right. Okay? Similarly, you can orient other bones. But make sense of, you know, look at an obvious landmark on a bone and look to the fully articulated skeleton to see which way that landmark is situated in the anatomical position so that you can, if given an isolated bone, be able to tell whether it's right or left. All right, so those are the girdles. Let me talk just a little bit about the scapula. This week we have even more names for processes that are other than the word process. Like last time we were talking about some. They're all processes, but they have even more names. That's not true of the scapula, though. The scapular processes are actually called processes. So I'll get to the other names in a minute. While I'm still on the scapula, though, which is the shoulder blade, notice that there is a smooth surface, and the other side has this ridge on it. And notice that that ridge, which is called the spine of the scapula, is what faces posteriorly. So that's a telltale sign that that's the posterior side that you're looking at right now of the scapula. And there's also a socket in the scapula. Notice it's not nearly as deep as the acetabulum of the os coxa. And that's why the shoulder is much more mobile than the other ball and socket of the body, which is the hip joint. Those two are the most mobile of all the joints, but the shoulder much more than the hip. Because the only thing holding this thing in place, like I said, is muscles, tendons, and ligaments, the rotator cuff. This isn't much of a socket. But the socket is called either the glenoid fossa or the glenoid cavity. And just like the acetabulum must be facing laterally, this is the lateral edge of the scapula. So you know this is the back, and this is lateral. Therefore, that would have to be a right scapula. Okay? The other one would have the glenoid fossa on the other side for it to be the left scapula. Okay, now to the two processes. The way this is situated in the anatomical position is just like you see it on this. It's a little bit curved from back to front as you go up toward the top. So it's roughly in this position in an intact human. And when it's in that position, notice that one of these two processes, which are often confused by people, and they get them wrong because they're about the same size, but one of those two is higher than the other, this one that I'm touching. That's the one that actually is continuous with the spine. Okay, now that one is called the acromion. You can call it that. That's a standalone name, or you can call it the acromial process, or some people kind of combine those two and call it the acromion process. They're all acceptable. But why is it called the acromion? What's the root of that word? Acro, which means what? What did you say something? Acrobat has that same. What are acrobats? Where do they perform?
High up.
What's acrophobia?
Fear of heights.
Acro means high. This was called that because it's the highest point on the bone in the anatomical position. Okay? The other one, the other process that is, which is close to it, is called the coracoid process. Careful with that word. It's coracoid with a second C instead of coronoid, which you already had an example of last week, and there's another coronoid process today. Coracoid means like a raven. And if you look at this coracoid process, it looks like a raven's head. See that? So that's why it was called that. Coronoid, by the way, which is not part of this bone, coronoid is also a bird-related word. Coronoid means like a crow's beak, which is triangular in shape. And so you had a coronoid process last week, part of the axial skeleton. Where was it? Right, on the mandible. The part of the mandible that sticks up right here as a triangle is the coronoid process. It's like a crow's beak. And you have another one today. So when you look at that from your list, notice that it's also triangular in shape. Okay, but don't confuse coronoid and coracoid. If it's the part of the practicum, for instance, where you're not, it's not just multiple choice, you have to write it out. You can't misspell coronoid as coracoid. That's totally wrong. That's like misspelling B as C on a multiple choice test. Totally wrong, right? And relatedly, back to the ascoxa for a second, ilium is another word that you have to be careful with because there are two ilia in the body with an IUM, which is this one, that's the bone or the bony part, but EUM ilium is part of the small intestine. So if you misspell it that way, that's a totally different part of the body. Don't do that. They're homophonous though. They sound exactly the same. Spelling does count, yeah. Well, spelling very much counts on all the multiple choice ones. You have to spell A, B, C, or D correctly, or it will be totally wrong. But on the rest of it, spelling counts. You know, if I can't even recognize what you're trying, that'll be totally wrong. If it's very close, I'll give you a partial credit. But try to spell these correctly. Okay, let me talk just a little bit about the limbs now. There are two pairs of limbs, right? Upper and lower limbs. But each limb is divided into sections. So the upper limb consists of what three parts working proximal to distal? What's the proximal part of the upper limb? The brachium, exactly, which means arm. And therefore, brachial means having to do with the arm or part of the arm. That's why you say it's the biceps brachii. And there's another muscle called the brachialis. So the bone of the brachium is the humerus, right? There's one arm bone per limb, one brachial bone per limb. Distal to that is the forearm, which is properly called the antebrachium, which literally means before the arm, right? Ante meaning before, just like in antipasto, before the pasta, or a poker ante, before the deal is made. Yeah.
On the practicum, would you accept either form by saying arm or brachium, or do you want this?
Oh, that's a good point. If on any of these several examples where I said you can call it either of two things or maybe even more, never give me more than one. Choose one and stick to it. Because you're just opening yourself up for losing credit for something that you already got right if the two don't actually agree. Right? It would be like saying, you know, and answering a math question. 2 + 2 = what? If you write 4 or 5, well, those aren't the same things, so you would get it totally wrong. All right? So I'm glad you asked that. Okay, so we have brachium, antebrachium. There are two bones per antebrachium, radius and ulna. The most distal part of the overall upper limb is the hand, but what's the proper name for the hand? Manus. which is why the adjective that means by hand or having to do with the hand is manual. Right? Manual labor is by hand. An organ has manuals, the keyboards that you operate with your hands versus the pedals, which you operate by your feet. But there are subsections of the manus. The manus includes the wrist, which is called the carpus. And carpal, therefore, is an adjective meaning having to do with the wrist. And that's why we call these carpal bones. Not many people use the correct terminology, but carpal bones are really, each carpal bone is really supposed to be called a carpale. And the plural of that is carpalia. But most people just call them carpals, which is really just shorthand for carpal bones. Anyway, there are how many of those? Eight in each limb, arranged in two rows of four. Now, you don't have to know their individual names in this course, but you have to know that they are carpal bones, and you should know that there are eight of them. Okay? Distal to that, still part of the hand, is what section? The metacarpus, which literally means beyond the carpus. Just like metaphysics means beyond physics. So the metacarpus is the palm region of the hand, and the bones, therefore, are metacarpal bones. How many of those are there? Yeah, one per digit. Then you're officially in the digits, if you go distal to that. And there are five digits per manus in most people. What do we call the bones of the digits? Phalanges, which is a plural. What's the singular? Phalanx, right. Phalange is not a word. There's no such word as phalange. It's phalanx, which is a military term describing how soldiers line up. And that's why these were called phalanges, because the bones are lined up like little soldiers. Okay? So, there are how many phalanges in one manus? There are 14, right, which is not divisible by 5. 15 would be. But the reason it's 14 is because the thumb, unlike all the other digits in the hand, has only two phalanges, whereas the other digits have three. The thumb, by the way, is called the pollex. So there are two phalanges in the pollex, three in all the other manual digits. Now, there are 206 bones overall, right, in the whole skeleton. 106 of those are just in your hands and feet, over half of the bones. And 56 of them are just in toes and fingers. So there are 56 phalanges. And therefore, if we want to specify to someone which phalanx we're talking about, we can't just say the phalanx. There are 56 examples of that. So you have to completely narrow it down if you really want to uniquely identify it. Well, within a digit, and any, I'm only talking about the digits that have three of them, there are three categories of phalanges. The proximal, the intermediate, or those can also be called the middle, but not medial. Middle, not medial. Intermediate is better. And distal. So this one finger has a proximal, an intermediate, and a distal phalanx. But even if you use those adjectives, that doesn't uniquely identify a phalanx, right? The pollex, by the way, which has only two phalanges, doesn't have an intermediate. We just call it proximal and distal. Same thing's going on in the toes, by the way. The big toe or great toe is called the hallux. And it has only two phalanges. All the other toes have three, just like the fingers and thumb. All right? So, we have to use several different adjectives to narrow down, zoom in on one specific phalanx. Like, for instance, if I'm talking about this particular one, I would have to, if I meant this and no other, I would have to call this right manual, proximal phalanx one, or two, sorry, two. Because the phalanges are also numbered according to the digits. All the digits are numbered. The numbering starts with the thumbs, and they're numbered by Roman numeral, 1 through 5 to the pinky. Similarly with the big toe, 1 through 5 to the little toes. So this is right manual proximal phalanx 2. Right? It's obviously my right. It's manual because it's in my hand, not my foot. Proximal, it's a phalanx, and it's in digit number 2. So no other bone in the body is called all of that. And all the other ones have names that are similar based on their position. Now, the lower limb also has sections to it. What's the proximal part of the lower limb? That's the bone in it, but what's the whole, if everything is there, not just the bone? What is this part of the body? What is this part of the chicken that you eat? Right. It's the thigh in humans too. So it's thigh, and the thigh bone is the femur, which is the biggest bone in the human. And then from knee down to ankle, that's the leg, right? So don't be confused by the upper and lower. The arm is proximal in the upper limb. The leg is distal to the thigh in the lower limb. The leg has two bones in it, tibia and fibula. There's no such thing as a tibula. There's no such thing as a fibia. Okay? That then leads, distal to that is the foot. What is the proper name for the foot? No, that means of the sole. Pes, P-E-S. Yeah, and the adjective of pes is pedal or pedal. So pedal means of the foot, manual means of the hand. All right? That's why we're called bipedal organisms. We walk on 2 feet. All right, so just like the manus or hand comes in sections, the pes or foot comes in sections. The proximal section is the ankle, which is properly called the tarsus. The carpus has 8 bones, but the tarsus has only 7. Okay, so there are 7 tarsalia per pes, or tarsal bones. And you don't have to know the names of all of those, but you do have to know the names of talus and calcaneus, the 2 big ones. The talus is the superior one. That's what the tibia rests on. It bears the weight of the rest of the body. And the calcaneus is the biggest one. That's the heel of your foot. Okay, and there's 5 others. 7 total tarsal bones in each foot. Distal to that, analogously with the hand, is the metatarsal bones, are the metatarsal bones. And then the digits again, and I've already told you about the digits. Okay? One more thing I'll tell you before I let you loose. I want to talk about the humerus. This is a humerus, and remember I told you back when I started talking that there are more names for bump for processes today. For instance, there are tubercles and there are tuberosities in the skeleton. Now, they both share tuber. Tuber means bump. And for instance, we call potatoes tubers, right? It's really just because they're bumps on the roots. So tuberosity is just another way of saying a bump on a bone. It's a special name for a process. And tubercle, with that ickle suffix, just like ossicle means small bone, tubercle means small bump. Anyway, back to this humerus. On the distal end of the humerus, which is opposite where the head is, this is the head of the humerus. That's the ball that goes into the glenoid fossa socket to form the shoulder joint. So that the head always tells you that's the proximal end. The distal end, though, notice has 2 condyles on it. They are condyles, and you should recognize them as condyles because they're smooth. and they articulate with another bone. That's why they're smooth. But even though they are condyles, they go by different names. Okay? So there are two of them here. One of them is pretty much spherical. And on the fully articulated skeleton, that's this one right here. He's in the anatomical position right now, and so this spherical one, notice, on both sides, is laterally placed. That spherical one, which is a condyle, gets the name capitulum. Capitulum means little head. Capit means head, like in decapitation, right? Removal of the head. This is nice that they call this the little head, or a word that means little head, because the part of the bone, the part of the radius, which is the bone it connects to, that it actually is, that the capitulum is actually in contact with, which is this nice round part of the proximal end of the radius, that is called the head of the radius. So the head of the radius articulates with the little head or capitulum of the humerus. Okay, it's a condyle though, it just gets a different name. Right next to the capitulum is the other condyle on the distal end of the humerus. And notice that it has a groove in it that makes it look very much like the wheel of a pulley. This is where the rope would go through the wheel of the pulley. And that's what forms the hinge joint for bending the elbow. This particular condyle is called the trochlea. And what do you suppose trochlea means? No guesses? It means pulley. It looks like a pulley, so it's named something that means pulley. All right, so the trochlea is the actual pulley, but that articulates with what's called the trochlear notch of the ulna. That's how you get the bending of the elbow. Okay, the trochlear notch is the rope that goes through the groove on the pulley itself, which is the trochlea, but they're on different parts of the bone. By the way, that's the telltale way of knowing that you have an ulna instead of a radius. This is radius, this is ulna. About the same size, but this trochlear notch really gives away the ulna. The head of the radius, which is what I said articulates with the capitulum, that's also easy to spot, this nice circular depression on the proximal end of the radius. All right, I'll leave you alone now and look at everything.